So we watched Mallrats last night, and this is probably out of the movies that we've seen. I mean, Eric was looking like he had been beaten up throughout the whole movie. Was not very happy. He turned to me a few times and asked if he had died. And
this is all true.
You know, this I'm finding this hilarious because while this is, you know, at 33 years old watching this, no, it's not a good movie. This was actually one of, you know, my friends and my movies that we watched all the time when we were 15. So
sorry you had such bad taste when you were 15.
Well, you know, again, I mean,
I'm just saying when I was 15, I was watching things like Space Ghost Coast to Coast. And
so were we. So are we. I had this. No, I had a VHS tape where I went to the video store and like redubbed onto it of this movie as well as Mystery Science Theater, the movie, and Brain Candy. So there you go.
Brain Candy's not a very good movie.
That's true. Well, none of those are really good movies. The point is we were 15, but I mean, to a degree, I have a fondness for this movie because, you know, mall culture, at least in, you know, the mid to late 90s, was very much a thing in New Jersey where I grew up. And this is one of the very few or only movies that's a bunch of losers hanging out in a mall in New Jersey. And so I guess to a degree, you know, this is one of those movies that I like it because it's who I was as a teenager. It reminds me why I'm really happy that I have not lived in Jersey in, you know, many years. And at the same time, no, I can't say it's a good movie. And it's not a better movie than Clerks. And it's
it's not really.
I think
that little introduction you just gave is very instructive because I think that impinges actually on kind of crystallizes in my mind a sort of a primary criticism I have of Kevin Smith in general in his work is that he doesn't seem to be the type of person, and I don't know him. I'm not talking about him as a person or in his personal life. I'm talking about his artistic sensibility.
He's not the kind of filmmaker who, or
right. His artistic sensibility seems to be someone who has not graduated past the 10th grade. And, you know, what I mean by that is he's making movies that appeal primarily to the sense of humor and the emotional tenor of a teenager, which is unfortunate because I don't think that was true for Clerks. And Mallrats, I mean, whatever you get personally out of it, I mean, I have movies that I find personally engaging that I used to watch when I was younger and I still watch them sometimes and they're fine, even though I don't necessarily think that they're great movies. Mallrats is a mess. It is so bad that I was almost in shock.
Well, there were I will say there were points where he's like, who the fuck is she? You know, that's, you know, his girlfriend, like, or, you know, who the, oh, I thought that was Shannon Doherty. No, that's his girlfriend, you know.
On a plotting level, on a dialogue level, on an acting level, on a, just everything about the movie, nothing about the movie works. It is so astoundingly ill-conceived that the only explanation I can come up, it's funny. So I looked up, as I'm wont to do when I watch a movie, as I always, I look up the Roger Ebert review of it after I watch it. And, you know,
I will say everyone hated this movie.
Yeah. He didn't like it. He gave it 1.5 stars. What I thought was really interesting is how he ended his review, which I think kind of crystallized in my mind exactly where this movie went wrong, is that he loved Clerks, and a lot of people really did like Clerks. I think Clerks felt like a vibrant movie from an exciting new filmmaker. Mm-hmm. Yes, as we talked about last week, Clerks is certainly not perfect. The script obviously needed a couple of more revisions. It needed some tightening. If the acting had been a little better, you know, if he had had a little bit more money for it.
Give him an access to better actors and some sleep and, you know, like the luxury to actually write
and frankly, I think having a creative, you know, influence there to sort of help him along and shape what he did. Because, of course, you know, he did most of this, you know, on his own or with the help of friends. I mean, he did not do this in the Hollywood system, which is definitely not a criticism because that's where I'm getting at with Mallrats is that, you know, there was this story that Ebert picked up where he said that when I think they were at Cannes or something, and you know, Kevin Smith said they were kind of on a panel about young filmmakers that made their first films outside of Hollywood or outside of the studios, and you know, the whole panel was really about how are you going to navigate that now that you're getting studio attention? How are you going to, you know, work against that and really sort of make sure that your vision stays intact? And Kevin Smith's answer was, if they want to pay for my movies, I'll do whatever they want me to do. And Roger Ebert said at the time he thought that was a joke, but seeing Mallrats, he doesn't think that's a joke. And I agree with that. I think that this is primarily a movie where the studio gave him a shitload of money to make it, and he never said no to them.
You know, it's funny because, you know, at this point in my life and, you know, where I am creatively, I have a very different attitude towards that than I did when I was, you know, 15 and first watching this movie. To which I will say I'm not see, we're viewing this from 2016, where Kevin Smith, if he's not the most talented, if he's never going to win an Oscar, he's a cult filmmaker who's probably going to work as long as he wants to.
I think he knows exactly what he is and what he's doing.
Exactly.
I mean, he made a sequel to Clerks. He's making another sequel to Clerks because that's what the world is clamoring for. He's making a sequel to this movie.
He has a very devoted fan base, and he's at this point, if he's pandering to the base, you know, that's one thing, and you know, that's his decision, and fine, he's making people happy. What I'm saying is, at this point, we don't know, you know, when this movie is being made or being pitched or, you know, whatever, we really don't know what Smith's career is going to be. There is a degree to which, well, I made Clerks on, you know, no money and no sleep, and I did it, and, you know, suddenly they're offering me a lot of money. I'm going to do whatever the fuck they want, pocket the change, and then if I want to, you know, if I never get this chance again. I mean, there is, I think, a degree to which this is – I'm not sure if it's necessarily a bad thing to whore yourself out artistically from time to time. And I feel like while this – you know, this movie flopped. But if this movie had been a success, it would have been a good potboiler for him.
I don't think that there's any way this movie could have succeeded because it is so bad.
Well, that's the problem. I don't think Smith is the kind of person who – can write the mainstream Hollywood sex film that this one. Like, you could tell this was
Kevin Smith is not a good leader. He should be someone who has he's on a writing staff or he's on some kind of, you know, and he can do his own thing, but he also has guidance and he also has someone making the bigger decisions. I think that if you look at, and you're right, I think if you look at this movie from the point of view of 21 years ago when it came out, this had come out, what, a year and a half after Clerks or something
like that? He's in his mid-20s and, you know, he's suddenly having money for the first time.
I think that what you see here, and I think you see this kind of actually we'll tie this back to the first season of Trek About Presents when we talked about George Lucas. I think a similar thing happened to George Lucas or that happened to Kevin Smith. You know, like Kevin Smith obviously is not as talented as George Lucas. You know, George Lucas made, I think, at least one of the finest examples of sort of 70s filmmaking in American Graffiti. And obviously Star Wars was a huge mass hit that kind of helped set the course along with Jaws and a couple of other movies for the entire, you know, blockbuster culture that we've lived with for the past 25 years.
Yeah, he was able to see exactly and hit something very big.
Kevin Smith has never been as influential as that. But I think that in a similar way to how, you know, George Lucas made three Star Wars movies, got completely locked into that, could not find a way out of it, which is a shame because, again, I think he is a good filmmaker, and made three movies that are varying degrees of terrible in the Star Wars prequels and has never directed another movie, even though he keeps saying, I mean, I don't know if he said this recently, but he certainly was saying this at the time that he was making the prequels, that when he's done with these, he's going to take his mass fortune and he's going to go make smaller movies again. And he never did it.
Yeah.
I think the man is just fundamentally broken. I think that you see that.
Yeah, he tried some stuff and then just really, yeah.
I think that in a similar way, Kevin Smith unfortunately got locked into this form of, you know, body sort of examining the foibles and the lives of characters that are not very different from him and was never really told no. And I think that what the lessons that he took from Mallrats seem to be, I don't want to take the studio's money because the movie is not going to be good. I'm going to do my own thing. And I don't know that that's the right decision to make from that. I think that...
I mean, again, for him, it's not like it's hurt him. You know, he's certainly done well all the way to the bank. But
my problem with this is that, you know, I don't know. Let me see what Kevin Smith movies I've seen. So I've seen Clerks. I've seen Mallrats. I've seen Chasing Amy. I've seen Clerks 2. Zach and Miri Make a Porno. Maybe one other. I don't remember. I think that's all I've seen. You know, but I can kind
Dogma,
of.
Dogma, maybe?
Yes, Dogma. I saw Dogma. And I think that, you know, it's kind of a shame we're not talking about Dogma because that might be interesting to talk about. But there's no way I could ever watch that movie again. It's a shame because I think that he does have talent. I think that as a writer, I think he has a way with words. I think that he is a very, very intriguing kind of writer that examines a particular space in American culture and a particular type of person that we don't see a lot in movies. But he needs somebody to shape him. He needs somebody to tell him no. And the problem with Mallrats is that no one was telling him no because they wanted a Kevin Smith movie, but they grafted a Kevin Smith movie onto some sort of raunchy teen comedy. And it's just none of it works.
See, here's the thing. This is watching this, it actually felt like the direct-to-video version of the movie that I remembered watching. Like, it felt like its own bad sequel in a lot of ways. This seems almost a... Because, you know, a few years after this, so this was 95 and American Pie was 99. So American Pie came in. You could see this movie being that kind of a movie, you know, a big run. Now, whatever we will say about American Pie, it was huge. It launched several sequels and some direct-to-video sequels. And, you know, a lot of people will say it reinvented the teen sex comedy. But Smith has too distinctive a voice so that it doesn't really work as one of those. You know, American Pie worked because, you know, it was felt that it, you know, it was felt of almost a kind of a universal story in a way.
Who wrote or directed American Pie?
Exactly. Smith is too distinct for that. And so it doesn't really succeed as being, you know, a dirty sex comedy for teens. On the other hand, it, you know, because of all the weird, you know, body stuff in it that isn't quite working, you know, I could see a version of this movie that's dealing with this community of this mall and dealing with it in a real sense of place and having a real sense of place for this dirt mall and these two communities and these characters who work, because that is kind of what the Jersey Mall culture is. You know, it's a place you go to hang out. It's a place where anything can happen and you can meet anybody and, you know, all, you know, and today they're doing a game show, but it's not really good enough. He's not really good enough at doing that either, and so it kind of fails being both.
Well, I agree with you, but I think it's more than that. I think that on the one hand, he's pandering to his fans, and I think that I think especially the larger role that Jay and Silent Bob get in this movie, frankly, they're embarrassing. I think every single scene they're in is completely flat, doesn't work.
It's the kind of – you know, Jay and Silent Bob are
– every single time Jay said Snoochie Boochies, I wanted to shoot myself in the head.
Yeah. And like, see, you know, that's the thing. Like it – that feels like an in-joke drug slang around your friends, and most people have the good decency to not put that in a big screen movie.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just painfully unfunny. And but I mean, like, that was a big fucking catchphrase at the time.
And
not like, hey, I grew up in Jersey.
Maybe it was in your region of Jersey.
Well, it's.
I'm just telling you that it didn't make it the 90 miles to Delaware.
No, I know. So. Well, what I'm saying is it was a big catchphrase in Jersey, and I heard it all the fucking time. And so, yes, it's a different degree of painful, but it is still a very big degree of painful to hear that.
I think that primarily what I'm reacting to is I'm sad for Kevin Smith. I think that, and I think that this is why the critical reaction to Mallrats was so terrible and so kind of, I think everyone was sort of shocked at how bad the movie is. And I think that that's really fundamentally what it is. You know, Clerks feels like one of those sort of interesting, small, vibrant movies made by an unknown that come out from time to time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it feels like a betrayal for Mallrats to come out. It feels like this is not – Kevin Smith is not the person that everybody in 1994 thought he was. And that's fundamentally my problem with it, I think, is that Kevin Smith is a better writer than this movie.
Yeah.
I think that what I'm reacting to with this movie is really that Mallrats set the course for the rest of Kevin Smith's career in a real way. And I think that he never really got out of it. It's pandering on the one level. I think that if you pander to your fans too much, it becomes just a ridiculous cliche of itself. And on the other hand,
which I mean is what Jane Silent Bob Strike Back was.
Yeah,
I think I saw that movie.
And
I saw that once, and it was awful. You know, because
Kevin Smith knows who is paying his bills,
and that's it. That's it. I mean, again, we will talk. You know, Smith is a success as a filmmaker, as somebody who has made films that people like and has made money for them. I mean, we can't say that he is.
Well,
but as an artist. You know, Jay and Silent Bob are the least interesting things, and they were what's marketed the most.
And I am not criticizing Kevin Smith for making movies that appeal to a specific type of person and that they really respond to. I don't think that everybody needs to make something for that appeals to a mass audience or to everybody. You know, there's a reason why we're not working our way through the entire, you know, work of Kevin Smith, because frankly, I after a certain point, it would feel churlish just to go, this was a shitty movie. Next week, this was a shitty movie. Mm-hmm. Next week, this was a shitty movie. Like, there's no point to that. I think that, you know, one of the reasons why we sort of had this idea to talk about these movies is because I think Clerks really was a fundamentally interesting movie with a vibrant voice and an interesting point of view. And Mallrats is not, and I think Chasing Amy will be an interesting experiment to see what I think of that movie. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with what Kevin Smith is doing. I just look at it from the point of view of there's a different universe out there where Kevin Smith became a sort of, you know, Woody Allen type and was making a different type of movie that is much better. And he fell into a very, very locked in sort of pandering. And it's a shame. I think it's just a shame because he's better than what he's doing and what he's continuing to do for the past 20 years.
I mean, yeah, you know, maybe
he's not. That's the other thing too, is I'm perfectly willing to entertain the possibility that Kevin Smith is as talented as he is. And
well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, he's been, you know, lately, you know, he's been branching out into, you know, horror movies. Like Red State was his attempt at doing a horror story. He's written some more surreal bodies horror type of stuff, which I have no interest in seeing just because, you know, I don't know. Doesn't it feel like he developed a little too late?
I have
seen Red State and I thought it was a very interesting movie. You know, and
well, I think that that's actually a perfect example because last week on the Clerks podcast, you said, "Hey, you should watch Red State."
Yeah.
I was like, "I'm not watching."
Yeah,
that.
It's
and I think that that's a shame because if it actually is a good movie, I think that the Kevin Smith brand
is keeping
people away from maybe an interesting artistic movie. I don't know.
It's a Smith movie in that all the characters are very, you know, talky. You know, there are, you know, monologues, you know, and things like that, and everybody is, you know, even as, you know, horrible things are happening around them, you know, people still have kind of a cerebral view of everything. But at the same time, you know, it's not at all a comedy. There are no, you know, joke, you know, Jay and Silent Bob are not in it. You know, it's not a, I don't know. John Goodman is fantastic in it, but.
Yeah, but I don't think we need to talk about Red State anymore because I haven't seen it.
Of course. There is a universe in which, you know, Mallrats was an intelligent sex comedy that took place in a mall and, you know, was showing all of these weird people who are living in the mall and, you know, all of them coming. But we got this instead.
Well, it is terrible. I mean, there's no two ways around it. I mean, you know, everybody criticizes Kevin Smith for not being a very visually distinctive or interesting director. Whatever. I don't care. I mean, he's got a very sort of television sensibility, and I mean that in a television sense in like the, you know, pre-golden age of television. You know, Breaking Bad got a lot of attention for its directing and cinematography, and that's primarily because, you know, for 50 years, television was not known for its visual flair. And so, you know, it's fine. He's a competent director. He knows where to put the camera to get a two shot. He knows where to put. I mean, there are certain.
Listen, it looks like a mall in New Jersey, and that's I guess the highest compliment you can give it.
Yeah, I mean, he's not. You know, he's not doing anything interesting with the camera. He's not doing any sort of. He doesn't really have much of a visual style of his own. I don't think that you could ever really look at a Kevin. I don't think you would get a lot out of doing a shot by shot analysis of Mallrats.
Yeah.
If anybody has ever done such a thing, please let us know because I would love to know how that went. But it's fine. I'm not there to criticize him for his directing style because it is what it is. That's not his point. It's like criticizing a Woody Allen movie for its directing style. I mean, there's other things to directing besides where to put the camera. I mean, it's acting, it's all those things. And so,
yeah, Smith is the type of person you can tell prefers to direct actors than direct a camera,
which is fine.
As is Woody Allen,
right?
But
the real strength, I think, of Clerks was the writing. And again, while the writing was a little flabby in places and while the movie should have been tightened up, I think that it's as good as it ever was going to get in the kind of environment that Kevin Smith was making it on that budget under those kind of time constraints. Mallrats had none of those problems. I mean, this was funded by a major studio. Let's put this in context. The budget for Clerks was $25,000. The budget for Mallrats was $6.1 million.
Yeah.
You know, and where did that money go? I mean, obviously the money went to renting the mall. The money went to all of the extras. Yeah. The money went to the big, you know, set piece at the end with the game show. The cops, I mean, all the sort of like, you know, Jay and Silent Bob trying to play Batman. You know, there's places the money went. You can see where the money went, I suppose.
But $6 million worth of – and yeah, you could tell that he didn't quite he was given too much. I mean, maybe a $1 million budget would have been a better choice that, you know.
Well, and I think that this – you know, I'm not – you know, there is a certain strain of film criticism that does say that budget obviously impacts – the sort of, you know, scale or the sort of success or failure of a movie. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that, you know, under budgeting something and making it look cheap is one thing. I think that Kevin Smith is one of those filmmakers that does much better with a very restricted budget.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one of the reasons why it's going to be interesting to watch Chasing Amy next week, because that had a budget of $250,000.
Yeah.
I mean, we can see where Kevin Smith's career went from 1994 to 1997 very easily.
See, it's going to be interesting seeing Chasing Amy, because I remember that being he has a lot less of a budget, so – you know, he can only really work with talking, which is, you know, cheap compared to, you know, an effects shot. And so it is mostly, you know, conversation based. It will be interesting to see if that matches up with it.
I agree with that. And I think that, you know, the problem really with Mallrats fundamentally is Kevin Smith is not good at constructing a plot. And
it's trying to be the kind of plot where he's, you know, it's showing a bunch of different little threads and they all come together in this one big scene at the end. And, you know, you can see the skeleton in the outline where it could be really interesting and really funny when all the elements come together. But again, you had trouble following what the separate elements were in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea. I mean, apparently so you start out with this character, Brody?
Wait, which, the Jeremy London or the Jason Leigh character?
Jeremy London.
So T's T.S.
Sure.
Yeah.
T.S. and his girlfriend, and there's something going on about a contestant for a game show, and it's never really clear. And her father, I thought, was the game show host, but he's actually the producer. And then she appears in the movie like 40 minutes later, and I actually said to Richard, who the fuck is that? You know, and so there are things about it that just don't make any sense. I mean, I think that it's really a shame that Kevin Smith had all this money, and as I understand it, he was working on this script before a major studio approached him to want to fund the movie. And I guess once that happened, he went off on this other direction, and the studio, you know, actually wanted a plot. You know, it's even
Well,
it's a shame because Mallrats could have been an interesting, you know, day in the life of a mall and these characters in a similar way that Clerks was.
Yeah.
But the problem with the movie is I don't have a sense of who these people are. I mean, think about in Clerks. You know exactly who Dante is. You know exactly who Randall is. You know exactly who his girlfriend is. You know all these things about them, even though the movie is not sort of telling you. You have a very good sense of who these characters are, what their values are, where they are in life. Right?
Yeah.
And this movie, I have no idea what any of these characters are. I don't know anything about them. I get no sense of them whatsoever.
Yeah. The plot is, you know, the plot such as it is that, you know, these two guys get dumped by their girlfriends on the same day. They go to the mall to, you know, try and drown their sorrows, and they eventually get them back. And again, you can see this being almost an episodic thing. I mean, there's a bunch of different stores in a mall. That's a very easy way of, you know, making an episodic plot, similar as Clerks was, maybe a little better structured. But, you know, in the movie as it is, they get together back with their girlfriends at the end because this is a comedy and it has to have a happy ending, not because of any real reasons. You know, they don't really...
No, I don't agree with that. I think that the fundamental structure of the movie and the fundamental plot of the movie is so much more driven by studio calculation of what they think a teenage audience is going to like than anything else. And I mean, I have to put the blame on Kevin Smith. He didn't say no.
Yeah.
He said, yep, let's do it. He's lapping up the studio shit more and more and more. You know, yeah, let's have a plot. Yeah, let's have a game show. Yeah, let's have Jay and Silent Bob in it. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's do all these things.
Yeah, again, gives, you know.
He's not good at any of this. And what's even more galling about it is everything that was interesting about Clerks and the ways in which those characters were written and the kind of characters that he was telling a story about are the same types of characters in Mallrats, but it's completely gone.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess this is part of why I said, you know, maybe this would be better on a $1 million budget, because then you can't, you know, then maybe you can't have this big game show set piece. I mean, I think the
money is a red herring. I think the money is incidental to the actual studio manipulation of Kevin Smith.
I guess I'm taking the money as, you know, a symbol of that. Maybe a lesser budget.
That's fair.
Lesser budget meaning less of a manipulation. You know, in other words,
if an independent producer came to Kevin Smith and said, "I'll give you $1 million to make your next movie, and we'll find a distributor for it later."
Yes, you know, then he can't afford this big set piece. So that, I mean, the big climaxes and confrontation in Clerks. I mean, all that, you know, the worst is they trashed the convenience store set and had to clean it up, you know, which was also filmed partially. So
yeah.
I mean, you know. We would assume the Mallrats would have a similar ending in which there is, you know, more of a verbal and a, you know, confrontation between everybody. And, you know, maybe there is a way of – but, you know, now that we have this extra money, oh, well, you know, maybe a game show kind of a set would be a cool idea. You know, that's something big and, you know, can't really pull that off. And
what this really reminds me of is John Waters' studio movie Crybaby. And John Waters is a much better filmmaker than Kevin Smith.
Even when he had no budget.
Even when he had no budget. He's a much more, I think, strong-willed film director. I mean, Crybaby, while it was funded by a studio, I don't think you can in any way say that Crybaby was influenced by the studio.
But also, you know, there to a degree, I will say that was after what he'd been working for 10, 15 years and already had, you know, this was Kevin Smith's second movie. So in terms of, you know, weight, you know, John Waters, oddly enough, because he's thin as a rail compared to Kevin Smith, had a lot more weight to throw around to get, you know.
That is true. That is a good point. And I think that you know, I don't want to fault Kevin Smith for completely, you know, acceding to the demands of the studio. I think that sometimes studios have good ideas. I think that the idea of studio notes and television or movies always being against the sort of will of the filmmaker or the will of the creative force is a little overblown. I think that, you know, a good editor for a novel is a valuable skill, and that's really important to shape something. I think that the role of the outside person who's looking at what a creative person is saying and saying, you know what, maybe this needs a little bit of work,
well,
is very important. I just think that the kind of obviously, you know, manipulation where Kevin Smith said, here's the script, here's what I have, you know, and maybe the original script for Mallrats was more like Clerks, where these characters were just in the mall for an hour and a half. I don't know.
Well, here's one of the things. I mean, Clerks is a, you know, good example. It wasn't obviously Hollywood saying, you know, cut the ending of the original ending of Clerks was that, you know, so in the movie now, you know, Randall tosses him, you know, the sign and says, you know, oh, you're closed, and movie ends. The original cut continues another 5 minutes. A guy comes into the store, shoots Dante, robs it, and leaves. And everybody hated that. Like,
well, yeah, it's a terrible ending.
Exactly. And basically Brian O'Halloran and, you know, everybody, you know, finally convinced him. And, you know, everybody and Smith himself agrees that was the right choice. So the original beginning of Mallrats. So there's a scene.
Although it would have saved us from Mallrats 2. Clerks 2.
Yeah, that is true. And Clerks 3, for that matter. There's a line, you know, where someone, you know, mentions, oh, you know, to Brandy's father, oh, there was trouble at the governor's ball. So, which was some event that he produced. So the original beginning of it was the governor's ball, and it's, and T.S. somehow ruins it or something about that, which, number one, in the original script, apparently it gave a bit more interaction between T.S. and Brandy at a point when they're dating, and, you know, so to give a bit more of their character, gives a bit more why her father hates him and all those kind of things. And basically the note on that was, you know, it's called Mallrats, but it takes a half hour to get to the mall. So I'm not, you know, again, on the one hand, I'm not sure if that was the right note or not, because, you know, I've actually never seen the scene. I know it exists. It was filmed. I don't know if it would, you know, have helped your problem.
Is it in the director's cut that's a half hour longer? Because this is exactly what Mallrats needs, is to be a half hour longer.
And that was the thing. I mean, I know in general the director's cut isn't really much better, but...
You know, I don't know. And I think that one of the main problems with this movie is, you know, fundamentally that the characters, again, I don't have a good sense of who they are. And... What I think
it feels like all of that was established in another movie that we didn't see.
Yeah, the movie starts out that way. And I think that fundamentally, I think it's a miscalculation from the very beginning, because Clerks worked on some level because it was telling a very personal story about very specific characters who had a very specific way of talking and a very specific place in their lives. But they lived this was a very small life. You know, this was the day in the life of a person who worked at a convenience store. Mallrats is too large for these characters. And I think that Kevin Smith, his characters, it kind of fundamentally betrays them when they are these small people. And I don't mean small people in a bad way. I just mean average people that are living average lives. And there is a sort of, you know, and we'll talk about this a little later when I want to talk about the actual setting of the movie, because I think the setting of the movie at a mall is very calculated and not incidental at all, in a very different way than what you're probably thinking. Mm. But the what I mean by the smallness of it is just that, you know, Clerks was really sort of celebrating the fact that, yes, even the guy at the convenience store that you go to once a day to buy cigarettes and you never really talk to has an internal life, has feelings, has motivations, has hopes and dreams, has people that love him. You know, Randall, his girlfriend, his other girlfriend in Ohio, and really talking about the sort of, you know, social impact that kind of forgotten people can have. And, you know, while that's a little overblown for Clerks, I think that's some of what he's doing.
That was the intention, if not the quite the execution.
Yes. And with Mallrats, the problem is that Kevin Smith is trying to translate his skill in telling these small stories about very, very average people into a Hollywood teenage comedy that has to have a big denouement at the end with this big set piece. It has to have this plot. It has to have these characters interacting with the real world and the bigger world, quote unquote, in very large and dramatic ways. And the two forces in the movie are completely fundamentally thematically at odds with each other.
I mean, this is the, you know, I'm thinking of the generally where Brody ends up at the end, how he's ends up being the host of the Tonight Show. And I mean, that's kind of, you know, number one, it's obviously allegorical for, you know, Smith, you know, sudden success, but, I mean, that's it exactly. The asshole who's just making quips suddenly becomes, you know, world famous for it.
Right.
That's, I get, you know, rather than just he's some, you know, and these adventures in the mall change their lives forever, you know, where in Clerks, the characters are just some schmucks. And, you know, even though this is a big day in terms of certain personal events, it's still really they're just in a period of stasis. And I mean, it's that. You know, I don't know if celebration is, because I mean, it's almost a lamentation. It's Clerks is more of a tragedy, which, you know, maybe a little grand to say about it because it's not even that active. But I mean, it is in its way an existential play in that, you know, Dante is just mired in his own self, and he's not going to escape. You know, Dante is not going to improve and become a better person.
Well, and I, you know,
and which is the point of the movie.
And I don't want to be. I'm trying to think of a non-condescending way to say this, but
oh, just go for it.
Kevin Smith is not. I don't think he's a very educated person. And
welcome to Jersey.
What I mean by that is he is formed by the sort of, you know, middle brow pop culture that, while it's interesting and while I like it, I think that Kevin Smith is a person that has a lot of raw talent, at least in the sort of script writing or writing areas. And if he knew more about, let's say, classic tragedy, or if he knew, I mean, it would have been a better, I think he eventually would have been a better filmmaker if he had had some instruction in better films and sort of better means of telling stories. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, in other words, he doesn't have this, you know, weird out of nowhere space alien style that, you know, some artists have that, you know, they have no real, you know, they break with convention in a lot of ways and they're very strong filmmakers because of that. But, you know, he's not one of those filmmakers, but at the same time, he's not. Well, he doesn't know the rules well enough to break them, and so it just seems a little needs more discipline, maybe.
Well, what the problem really is with Kevin Smith is that he is not that, right? He is certainly not someone who knows the rules well enough to break them, and he is also not a brilliant outsider artist.
Yeah.
And both of those paths are perfectly valid, but Kevin Smith is not either of them. And so Kevin Smith is informed a lot by pop culture. He's informed a lot by comic books. He's informed a lot by, I guess, marijuana. He's informed a lot by, you know, Star Wars and these kind of things. But he doesn't seem to have a good understanding of what a sort of a classic style is. And he doesn't have a firm grounding that he needs to be able to make a movie like this and make it interesting.
See, I think there is a very... You said earlier, you know, Kevin Smith doesn't seem like seems like the kind of person who's stuck in 10th grade. And I would definitely agree with you. And I guess my question is, you know, there is a very large degree to which it's made by a 10th grader for other 10th graders. And
yes, you're and very, no. you're, I think you're, that his audience has grown up with him.
Well,
And they're voting for Trump.
Well,
I mean, you know, I don't mean to be too much of a coastal elite about this, but I think that there is some, you know, there is some validity to that argument, I think.
Like I said, I had to get out of there.
Well, the other thing I want to talk about
I don't know. This point feels very unresolved to me right now. I guess it's a case of, So are you saying that Kevin Smith is an irresponsible filmmaker because he didn't, you know, take his audience?
No, there's nothing irresponsible about it. I don't think that his movies are bad for society. I don't think that he's doing anything dangerous. I don't think that he is.
He's somebody – I feel like there is a, you know.
His movies are fine for what they are. They have a specific audience. Again, as I said at the beginning of this conversation, that's why we're not going through the entire
Kevin
Smith, you know, oeuvre or whatever. You know, there's no point to it. You know, these movies are not for me. I don't think they're for you either anymore.
And that's, you know, again, on a personal level, I have a lot of thoughts about this. But I guess my question that, you're seeing the tragedy of, you know, Clerks was a movie made by somebody who had a lot of potential and could have been this great auteur. And instead,
I'm not saying that.
I'm exaggerating to make the point, but could have made stuff that was more auteur-y, could have improved, could have, you know, gone to film school afterwards, you know, could have done all of these things. But instead, he took the path of least resistance, took the studio money, made lazy films. I think, you know, we could accuse.
Yes, I think he is a lazy filmmaker. And I think even when Kevin Smith is trying, and I think you see this very clearly in something like Zack and Mary Make a Porno, where he is obviously trying to make a Judd Apatow movie.
Yes.
You know, he's not that original. I mean, and I think that's the fundamental point of it, where Kevin Smith wants to do something he seems to want to do something that's outside of his comfort level. He seems to want to do things that are different from the pandering movies to his fan base that pay his bills, right? And that's great. I think he should do that. But he never developed enough to be able to know how to be an original or how to speak to his own talents. And so when he wants to do something outside of his fan base, or when he wants to do something outside of the, what the hell is it called? The View Askewverse, he looks to other filmmakers or other movies that he admires and makes a form of that.
You've just described everybody I've ever grown up with. I mean, that is the Jersey experience in a nutshell. But yeah, he doesn't have – he should have – it would have been better if he had been a tiny regional voice maybe.
Sure. I mean, what, at like, I don't know, Monmouth Community Theater?
I don't know.
Is that a place?
No, but – I'm sure it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think you see this. I think you also see this most clearly in the setting for the movie, because on the one hand, yes, it's a mall. Malls are very important. A suburbia. I think they're less important than they used to be, but they're yes. still important. And but of course, a mall is to a certain degree, the mall is the perfect encapsulation of late stage capitalism, mm-hmm. where there is no public space anymore, and the public space that exists is actually private space. And
yeah, there is something fucked up in, you know, because, you know, going to the mall is just one of the things you do when you live in Jersey, and you hang out, you can get food, you can go shopping, you can feed your friends. There is something a little disturbing in having that be a center of commerce. Of course, you know, think about back in the day, you know, people going to the marketplace and all. It's the same thing.
No, it's not. I'm not even saying that. I'm saying that the okay, problem with the mall is that it is a specifically private corporate owned space.
Okay.
That is masquerading and serving the function of a public space. There's been a lot of writing about this.
Okay.
And
no, I understand that.
The marketplace, a city street. While yes, you know, if you're going to Soho for the day, that's all about shopping. If you're going to, you know, Covent Garden in London, that's all about shopping. If you're going to the Champs-Élysées, that's all about shopping, right? I mean, these are places to spend money, but they also primarily also are public places that are open to everybody.
In other words,
are governed by societal expectations that make them open to everyone.
In other words, the shop is privately owned by whatever shop is in there, but the sidewalk is a regular meeting place that is the same rules as any other public space in the city.
Yes. So that is kind of, and that I think is a way for, and obviously I don't think that Kevin Smith was really thinking about that, but it is indicative that the mall is the setting for his studio movie. Because this movie specifically is, I think the studio kind of perfectly calculated this movie to appeal to teenagers with its sort of, you know, a capitalism approved delinquency. Mm. And the movie is, and that is kind of one of the ways in which, you know, not to get too didactic or not to get too sort of political about it, but hey,
on our podcast, what?
That is one of the ways that the capitalist machine, you know, expunges its pressure sometimes. You know, these, you know, the, you know, all this writing.
Oh my God, it's like the Matrix.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, it, you know.
No, but yeah.
The studio is making this movie and saying, hey, look at these characters. Aren't they wacky? Aren't they like delinquents? And aren't they doing weird things? But they're not actually going out and challenging the power structure of where they're living or what they're doing. They're not trying to, you know, engineer a strike in the mall and make sure that, you know, it's open to everybody. I mean, they're kind of, you know, half-assedly trying to like stop corporate security, but it's like, come on.
At number one, Jay and Silent Bob are shown as completely buffoonish in this, as opposed to in Clerks, really defanging that tiger. And I mean, this is every slacker comedy has this kind of a plot structure in which there is our main character, who is a slacker, who is an underdog, who doesn't really have any social capital or any particular skills except, you know, some raw charm. And then there is the villain, who is, you know, much higher in the social, you know, in the social world, much more professional and talented. Mr. Svenning in this case, but I mean, it's in every, you know, Animal House is kind of the prototypical, you know, a prototypical example of that. And at the end, there is always this reversal of fortune in which the you know, that the hire is is dethroned, usually in a publicly humiliation way. I mean, in this, he is, you know, he literally eats, you know, Frody's stink bomb and has diphtheria, I think we're told at one point.
Which makes no sense.
But you know, that's the he's a doctor, not a mall researcher. And you know, that's certainly the case in this movie, but I don't know.
I don't know where you're going.
I'm not sure where I'm going with that either, but it is a, I don't know. This movie isn't, I don't know if this movie really is supposed to be advocating rebellion. I mean, that's.
No, I don't think it is, but I think I'm interested in it from the point of view of Kevin Smith is someone who was in Clerks making a sort of interesting, vibrant statement. And the studio gives him some money and perfectly chains him and, you know, is able to channel his energies into making exactly the type of movie that the powers that be want to be made. You know, I think Kevin Smith was used, frankly.
Well, we will. I feel like it. Like I said, it's going to be really interesting to see next week what the how he reacted to being used, frankly.
I think so. Yeah. And I don't know if he really knows that he was or not. I mean, we'll see.
He certainly was, you know, not happy with the reception of Mallrats, and certainly, you know. But at the same time, I mean, he's going back to that well. He's making,
well, of course he is.
He's making the sequel. If he were really that burned by it,
he knows where his bread is buttered, and he knows that his fans will go see the movie. I mean, I don't think that.
I guess,
and I don't, again, for the final time, I don't begrudge that at all. But
well. There is a degree. I know you're not a David Lynch fan, but David Lynch made a couple of movies and then was offered, you know, a truckload of money to make Dune, and made Dune, and it flopped. It was, you know, a horrible experience for all involved, you know, and he, for the next movie, he was basically given the offer of the studio could meddle and he'd have a real budget, or they'd give him freedom and give him like $5 and, you know, a bag of chips, and he did that, and that's when he made Blue Velvet.
Well, yes, and you're also talking about David Lynch.
I guess that's
I mean, there are examples of that littered throughout.
I know that.
I mean, that's basically the deal that Louis C.K. got to do his TV show.
Yeah,
that, you know, FX said, you know what, we'll give you, you know, $20 and a pizza to make your show, but we won't bother you at all. And more often than not, the show is wonderful.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is I can see, you know, there are plenty of examples of filmmakers and, you know, TV shows and all of those things where they were given the too much money and there was too much studio interference and it was terrible. And we can see how they reacted to that and how they became better artists from that. You know, that's the situation that Kevin Smith is going to be given with Chasing Amy in the next. And we'll see if he makes good on it.
But I think, you know, you look at it and you say, okay, yes, maybe even if Chasing Amy is wonderful and we both love it and we have a great conversation about it, he still made Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Exactly.
He still made Clerks 2. He's still going to make Clerks 3. He's still making the sequel to Mallrats.
But he's still making other movies. Is that maybe what he's – I mean, is that what he's doing? He's making his money – from doing sequels to the things that will make more money, and then when he, you know, other times. I mean, that's, you know.
I don't know.
Richard Linklater does exactly that. He makes these, you know. He does.
Well, but I think that we talked about doing the before movies with Richard Linklater, Before Sunrise and Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Before Midnight, I think. And you know. He's also a much better filmmaker than Kevin Smith, and he's also making these movies with a specific point in mind.
I don't think any other filmmaker we're going to mention, maybe that's the thing, any other filmmaker we mention, you counter with saying, you know, but he's not, you know, Kevin Smith's not as good as that, but I think that's kind of the point.
Well, I think that, I mean, again, to go back to the George Lucas comparison, I think that there was no reason for George Lucas to go back to the Star Wars well.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, the problem with, and I think you see this in the problem with The Force Awakens as well, where, you know, fundamentally, while the Star Wars prequels were terrible, I do admire George Lucas for trying to do something different and not pandering to the Star Wars fans.
Yes, and that's fair.
Whereas The Force Awakens, the second time I saw it, I was completely bored because it's basically just a nakedly calculating way for J.J. Abrams and Disney to get goodwill back for the Star Wars universe by giving them giving the fans exactly what they want and nothing else.
I know we really...
The Force Awakens is the Kevin Smith movie of the Star Wars franchise.
He would love to make a Star Wars. Now, I know we both generally don't like pandering things. We don't like pandering movies or pandering video games or whatever. And I do think it's funny that we love the Ace Attorney series, which after a while are very pandering things.
But even, I mean, I never finished the last one.
That's the other thing. After a while, I mean, you and I have outgrown that kind of maybe.
Maybe,
this
yeah.
is a thing that Kevin Smith, I will definitely say Kevin, these movies and Mallrats and all of them were very influential to me as a writer in the way that, I mean, I appreciate the way he's doing a lot of world building in this. There are Rick Darris is mentioned, and he's in Clerks. The 15-year-old Alyssa Jones, she's the sister of the main character in Chasing Amy. All of these characters went to high school together, vaguely know each other, have connections. This takes place the day before Julie Dwyer's wake, and we learn how she died in this movie. It takes place the day before Clerks. I appreciate that kind of ambition to it. I like the way that he has all of this taking place in a certain area of New Jersey with its own sensibilities and its own weird slang and its own customs. And on that level, I liked it. If I outgrew it when I, you know, stopped being, you know, 19 and even in my 20s and now, so be it. I'm not going to I don't think that art needs to be good for every phase of your life. Certainly some of the things I like now I didn't like when I was 15.
That is
maybe
true.
Maybe it's as simple as that. This was a movie that when I was 15 and hanging out with my friends, we would watch and laugh at. And now when I'm watching it with my friend now, it's not really that funny. I think you laughed once.
I think that's true. Yeah. And I think also it's instructive that we've talked about it for almost an hour and we haven't really mentioned the characters.
Exactly.
There aren't any characters.
Yeah, they're sketches.
Right.
Miss Ivana is, let's agree to disagree that that's a funny scene. She's an SNL character. She doesn't really have an inner life. She doesn't have
the lady with the three nipples. Yeah.
Yes. The Return of the Jedi monologue in
this movie feels fundamentally mean-spirited to the characters in a way the Clerks never did.
Yeah.
Like I can see, you know, the guy that dies in the toilet in the convenience store.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that's a funny scene. He's obviously played for laughs. He keeps coming back and asking for more things. But you know what? I know who that guy is.
And
I don't know who the topless, three-nippled fortune teller is.
The Return of the Jedi sequence, the bit about the Death Star in Clerks, where we see, number one, we see Randall watching Return of the Jedi, spitting this, having this idea, going into Dante, telling him his interpretation of the story, connecting it to their situation about unemployment and the main theme of does your job dictate your behavior, having a weird customer conversation, having another angle onto that theme, which again further underlines the rest of the movie. The direct analog to that in this movie is the question about whether Superman and Lois Lane can have a child. And it's, yes, Brody is a comic guy who's weirdly obsessed with, you know, the sex lives of superheroes, but it's just word vomit on his end.
Yeah.
The cookie stand thing is a funny bit, but they're just bits.
Right. Yeah.
It doesn't seem to have any thematic richness to it, even if it's as, you know, shallowly glib like like Clerks was.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, we'll have to see what happens next week with Chasing Amy. But if you have any thoughts on our conversation about Mallrats, please leave a comment on the post for this episode of the podcast at truckaboutshow.com.
I'm so scared during this. I'm going to get all these people from Jersey. What the fuck did you look? You know, who are angry. I can't go back there, Eric. Like, I think I'll be killed.
You might be. Is that a bad thing? That you can
to get killed? Yes!
No, that you can never go back to New Jersey.
I mean, my parents would be very sad.
You can meet them in the city. The city's better anyway.
I don't like the city.
Well, they're going to have to get over it.
I don't like the city.
The city is fine. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/truckaboutshow, where you can see our cool perks. And coming up in just about a week or so, we're going to be sending out the May patron special, which is going to be about the Klingons.
Ooh.
So you're missing out if you do not give us $5 a month or more. So if you'd like to listen to our cool patron specials that only people can pay as money can listen to, please go to patreon.com/truckaboutshow. Our social media username, where you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, is truckaboutshow. And as always, please leave us a positive iTunes review, both for Truckabout and Truckabout Presents. And don't forget our other podcast, Truckabout, where we are now in the fourth season of Deep Space Nine.
Wow.
Next week, again, we are talking about Chasing Amy. Wraps up this season of Truckabout Presents.
Oh, man.
And then, of course, next week we will have an announcement about the next season of Truckabout Presents.
Oh, man, what are we doing?
You'll find out next week.
Oh, boy.
That's why I just said you'll find out next week.
Well, I mean, but I'm doing it so I should know ahead of time. So what are we doing? They don't have to know.
You'll find out next week.
Oh, cool. I like mysteries.